This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Live and Learn. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Everywhere in the world, people are living longer, and an aging population is bound to change our society in many ways. Is Malaysia prepared to cope with the needs of her elders? I'm joined now by Professor Nathan Vittilingam, an advisor and past president of the Malaysian Healthy Aging Society, who also sits on the advisory panel of the Global Coalition on Aging, to explore how we should address the changing attitudes towards older people and their needs. Welcome to the show, Prof. Nathan.
Thanks very much.
Older people have different expectations these days. From your conversations with older Malaysians, what are they worrying about most?
I think a couple of things. One is obviously, I think the main thing is finance when you get old. You know, the second thing is their health status. And obviously the third thing is emptiness syndrome, where the children are going to leave and go away to greener pastures. So it plays on their mind as what... And I think we all are aware that most of the elderly with their EPF is just sort of used up and they do not have any financial savings. If you look back, I mean, a lot of studies have shown the most amount of financial aspects being used by the elderly is for two main things. One is getting a loan to buy a house, and the other one is children's education. So they are literally wiped out on the whole aspects or spectrum of having some savings for old age. So that's one of the biggest worry. And obviously loneliness falls into place, and how to cope with that and the fear factors of living alone. These are things. So one of the things is actually is we advocate in terms of the Malaysian Healthy Aging Society is to encourage people to live healthily so that you'll be independent in your old age when you get old.
Having said that, a lot of these conversations are now more at the forefront than they used to be. You know, yep. It used to be that, well, you don't have the internet, you don't have this wealth of information. But so do you find that people are better equipped now to deal with these issues? I mean, they're perennial issues, but are people preparing themselves better, or is it the same as it's always been?
I think if you ask me what it was 10 years ago to now, I think that people are becoming aware, you know. It's very clear. For instance, take what we're doing now, a radio show on this that's passing on information to the public itself. The media, if you look at the newspapers, a lot of articles on aging areas and issues itself. And if you look at billboards placed by the government in terms of healthy living and prevent diabetes, etc., and everything. So educating the public, to me, is the most important avenue in relation to this. So answering your question, yes, I think it is growing. It's growing now, and I think it'll keep on growing because your exposure and your opportunities to get into internet these days gives you some information. Sometimes maybe wrong information, but it's a useful information sometimes. You know.
Are we guilty of stereotyping older people, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think we are. You know, there are lots of myths and misconceptions taking place. Very often, it is looked at someone has reached retirement and age of 60, they feel that he can't do a couple of things. The fear factor of them allowing them to drive, the fear factor of them walking along the streets, being so there are a couple of things. One of the common myths is intimacy and aging. You know, I mean, people think that once they reach 60, sexuality goes downhill. So there are a number of issues. So you're right. We tend to stereotype. We feel that once someone has reached a certain age, they will not be able to contribute to society.
But with that said, I mean, that's an unfair statement, of course, because older people have this wealth of experiences,
exactly,
and life skills. And
exactly.
How can we harness those skills?
I think... I mean, if you ask, I think what's happening now globally, in many countries, there's no such thing as retirement. I think the first thing, that word should be taken off from the dictionaries completely. So yeah, these people have got enriched knowledge, and you know, obviously they need to pass it down to the younger generation. So they should be allowed to carry on working in some way. Now, why I'm saying they should be allowed to carry on working is because then, you know, they maintain their mental capacity as well, and they will be much more healthier in that way. Two, obviously, in terms of transforming information to the younger generation of various wealth that they've enriched, that will help, especially people in the academic area. You know, and they will be able to pass down a lot of information which they've acquired all these years. And I think you're right on that score. You know, you should.
You mentioned, though, work in some capacity, and I think that's an important phrase, in some capacity, because it's unlikely that that elderly people will have the same energy, will have the same sort of stamina as a younger person. What employment opportunities are there for older people, and how can we shape the employment space to allow that?
I think we need to, first of all, break down employment in blue-collar and white-collar. You know, obviously that's the, now obviously someone like you and me are very much in the desk area. There's no reason why one cannot keep carrying on, but obviously someone in the low income group. But there's a such thing as retraining them to other sort of employability and other type of capabilities. And I mean, if you look at McDonald's, if I'm allowed to mention that, if you look in Singapore, they've actually opened up outlets for their elderly age group to run it, you know, and they've also got outlets for the deaf and dumb to run it, you know. I mean, that's providing opportunity for people to carry on with their life skills. And obviously, they can be trained, they can be maintained. And one of the good things about this is these people are very committed to work. You know, unlike you get a younger generation comes in and they'll be moving on. So these people have sort of carried on working and that. So it's a matter of giving opportunities for the older age group to function in any working capacity, and they can, you know. So that's one. Now, work sometimes does not need to be in terms of a monetary point of view. If you look at it, it could be also be on a voluntary point of view that people are offering a certain capacity itself. And I think one of the things that, you know, if you look at a lot of religious places like the mosque, the church and the temples and everything, the ideally is they can run classes for children, you know. It does not need to be religious classes, but to emphasize on math, science, you know, in English and that sort of thing. And get the seniors who like to come in. And so some of the seniors that you look at, they are looking at, not in terms of monetary point of view, employability, but something to keep them going, mentally stimulated, to keep them healthy. That's what it is, you know.
Aside from employment, what role do you think older people should play in our society overall?
I think one of the things is you could look at them on a lot of areas on advisory capacity. And I think that enriched knowledge they have, they can play consultative aspects of things. And I think if the countries, we all are aware, Malaysia is moving towards an aging nation. And if we are looking at it, policies being drawn up, you should get people of that age group to look at it and see, look, what are the things that they need and what are the things for the present or the future and what was in the past. You know, so they will be able to look and identify the issues and problems that they had gone through. So that's one of the ways to look at it, you know, and give them the opportunities from there.
Out of curiosity, every time we say, you know, Malaysia's moving towards an aging society, as someone who's the past president of the Malaysian Healthy Aging Society, what's considered aging, I guess? At what point do we enter that, since we're all living longer?
Great. There are a lot of theories on aging. Interesting enough, last week when I was in a seminar and asked this crowd as, what age do you consider is aging? And some people say 30, some people say 50, some people say when you reach menopause, some people say at the age of retirement. But actually, if you look at it, we tend to refer to it as when your growth spurt stops. So that means you're looking at 18, 19, when your growth spurt stops, you're actually starting to age. You know?
Oh, no.
So you know, if you look at it, that's one of the theories. But if you really want to be more scientific, you can go back to say that at the time of conception, you know. But you can also go back and say, look, at the time of the development of a cell, you know. So there are many theories. But I think it's immaterial of theories. But I think the most important thing is to maintain a good quality of life and a healthy life, so that, you know, because we know the statistically longevity of the people these days because of medical screening, because of better nutrition, you know, you're looking at issues on this, so they're going to live longer.
Are people afraid to have the aging conversation, you find?
Some of them do. I think one of the aging conversation, the fear factor comes to is people is, when is time coming to me, you know, when is it? That ring of that bell that's going to take me up out of this world. So the fear factor of death comes into being in some of these people as well. So the fear of aging is mainly on that. And the other fear factor is also because of, do I have enough funds for my future, you know? So will my children look after me, you know, will my children care for me, you know, that sort of thing. But I think if you look at it these days, a lot of the elderly prefer to live independently on their own because they still can carry on the normal activities of daily living. So why should they be dependent on the children? And the other thing is they say, look, I've got my own life and the kids have got their own lives. So they look at it in that spectrum, you know.
Is that a change from how it used to be in the, I guess, traditional idea of what an Asian family is? Because traditionally speaking, the expectation is that you have to care for your parents and that your children will care for you.
Yeah, I think you're right on that score. I mean, obviously, we all know that the extended family system has sort of gone down. And if you just do a survey of the younger generation, ask them, you know, they say they just do not have the time because they're caught up with the rat race, and everybody's caught up with the rat race. So that's true. But this is why it's so important to encourage people to age gracefully and healthily, so that they can be independent on their own. They can still move around. They can drive around. They can, you know, go out for a meal or go for a show or whatever. And obviously, the emotional bond with children is so very important, and also with grandchildren. And this is nowadays with the internet and, you know, your Skype and everything, that gives you a good communication. A lot of the older generation are communicating with their grandchildren, more with their grandchildren than their own children, I think. You know, if you look at it, that's what they are looking forward to.
I'm speaking today with Professor Nathan Vithyalingam, an advisor and past president of the Malaysian Healthy Aging Society, who also sits on the advisory panel of the Global Coalition on Aging. And we are talking about whether Malaysia is prepared for an aging society. Up next, we take a look at that from a policy angle. You are listening today to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You are listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me, Professor Nathan Vithyalingam, advisor and past president of the Malaysian Healthy Aging Society. We're discussing, well, aging and whether Malaysia is prepared for all of this. And on a policy level, are we failing to plan for the growing numbers of older people and the possible impact on public services as well as society as a whole?
I think that we're not really fully ready yet. I think that's very true because I think I think there's been a lot of talk about the Aged Care Act that's supposed to be coming, and it's still not been tabled at all. So that's, and the second factor is, it's rapidly moving fast in terms of the aging population. And this aging is not just the community. You need to look at aging aspects of environment. You have to look at the aspects of sports, play area. You need to look at the aspects of the financial aspects of somebody. You need to look at the medical aspects. So it's a whole holistic aspect of things. And I don't think we have really sat down to look at it in a holistic aspect of thing. Some of the countries, what they've done is they've got ministerial officials in various different ministries to sit together like a think tank group. And get. Now, there's a lot of myth that aging has got to do with health. You know, which is not true, because it's also got to do with human resources, it's also got to do with community, it's also got to do with education, lifelong learning, and all comes under education. So it's a bigger spectrum than what we look at. So I really think that we need to really sit down and look at that very seriously.
What are the issues that you feel the government should address? I mean, especially, for example, with the Aged Care Act, what would you like to see enacted within that?
One of the things I would like to see is it's mandatory for people running nursing homes to be trained. I think that's one of the important issues, because that's something that very often when we go out giving public talks and everything, that seems to be coming out of a lot of people's mind, that the people running some of these homes are not trained at all. So it's possible to train them. I think we have got enough resources, of manpower resources, to do this training itself. So that's one big issue. And obviously, I think the aging is it is not necessarily the age of 60, because if you look at WHO, it's calling aging a life course. So I would suggest that right from the young generation, made aware of aging and look at what you call in terms of saving for the future. And so the people become aware of the need for these sort of things. Obviously, one of the other things is there's a need to look at, not everybody needs to go to a nursing home. So one of the things is they need to look at establishing well-run daycare centers for for the elderly. And I think that is, if you look at a lot of literature that's out, it's basically looking at social integration of people who are aging in the community to come to a place in, from 9 to 5, you know, and makes it secure for the children who are going to work to know that their parents are safe in this environment. There's also sort of medical backup to that if the need arises of those sort of things. So that's one big area. You look at, I mean, obviously now a lot of people are talking in terms of developers and talking in terms of setting up retirement village, lifestyle villages and homes. If you look at it, the first retirement village, a lifestyle village, I mean, obviously Florida is where the whole thing started developing. But if you look at Britain, the first retirement home or retirement village started in 1918, which really was just before the war. That's when it was the first thing. And then there was a lapse until 1955. Then the more retirement village and lifestyle villages came into being, you know.
What would an ideal sort of day center look like in your view here in Malaysia?
Well, and if you ask me, an ideal day center should be one that has provides community activities in that center. Structured, some of it may need to be structured, some can be unstructured activities, like, and it's actually designed by the people coming into the center itself. Obviously, what you need in these centers to run are trained occupational therapists, one. Two, it's be worthwhile if you have got a trained nurse. You don't need to have a doctor. You could always have a visiting. And then, so that, to look at nutrition. Nutrition is one of the main areas. So you, now, the benefits of a day center, which is well structured, is you're looking at social interaction, communication, prevent loneliness in the elderly, and the most important thing is maintaining their mental spirits as well. So these are the some of the things you look. So if you look at it, some a lot of the developments that are taking place in big housing estates that are coming up, allocation of a piece of land could be left for the development of a day center. And if you look back, Rukun Tentangga in some ways was a community sort of get-together. I mean, that was intergenerational mix. But if it's a very much similar concept.
Right now, would you say, I mean, we've talked about society, but is our environment geared towards or against older people taking part in their communities and in their surroundings?
No, I think if you're looking at environment, obviously that's one big area for healthy aging. Environment is a big issue you're looking at. If you look out of the window, the pollution itself tells you that it's not an environment for us. But it can be easily be sorted out. Now, obviously, the accessibility of buildings for the aged elderly is so very important. The flooring to be non-slip so that they do not fall and that sort of thing. Providing opportunities for the elderly to move around and also to be accessible to some of the toilets nearby and that sort of thing. And if you look at WHO, they're now coming up with age-friendly cities. Now, age-friendly cities, there are only about 33 in the world now. And the only one in this part of the region, is there are two in India, and there are a couple in Australia and in Japan, you know. But none of the other Asian countries have looked at making it an age-friendly city. And now, if you make it into an age-friendly city, the advantage that it's going to be is you're going to encourage tourism of the elderly into that area because then people realize this is an age-friendly city.
It's safe.
It's safe. So they move in. And it's not something that is going to cost you millions of dollars. It's just a matter of mindset, policy changes, and getting a consultative group to come up with advice on how to make it an age-friendly city. And a lot of our tourism places here could be made in an age-friendly city.
Let's not, you know, be so ambitious right now and look at the city. I mean, if I could ask you for an example, if you look at Bandar Utama, for example,
yes,
how would you convert it into an age-friendly neighbourhood?
Well, one of the things you do is to get into the local municipality council, sit down and advise them. I mean, one of the basic simple things is, okay, if I'm 70 years old, I'm walking down this row of shops in Centre Point, and I want to get into a toilet. Now, one of the simple things that could be done is to label it as an age-friendly restaurant, and which means I can walk in there and say, look, can I use your toilet? And they'll allow me to use the toilet, you know, one. Two, I come in with my grandchild. You only pay for one. So you're encouraging intergenerational mix. And so this is a sort of basic. So you don't need to do a big, massive change of the. It's a mindset thing that you do. And if there's the documents in it, that you look at it and change some of the policies. the chairs that you sit on, whether there's a park and the park is, whether it's accessible, and those, so it can be done. But you're right. A small community could also look at making it an age-friendly community.
We're not the only people in this region who are heading into an aging society. In Singapore, for example, the elderly have smart cards that they can swipe at road crossings, and then that slows down the speed so that traffic lights change. How close are we to incorporating these sorts of amenities for our older citizens?
I don't think it's coming yet at all, because at the moment we're just basically looking at educating the public how to age healthy. And very often the emphasis is on basically what, if you really look at the main thing people talk is exercises, you know, and eat well. But they fail to realize the importance of mental health. It's the most important thing for an elderly, you know, and social integration. So there are more to be done still, and that's why to create awareness is such an important thing itself, you know.
Are older people open to the idea of getting mental help reach outs?
I think one of the things is a matter of creating public educational awareness of the services that, I mean, it doesn't mean that I've got to be institutionalized or something, but very often you speak to some of the older age group, they just want to communicate, they want to talk to somebody. And that's why the emphasis to we looked at, it's so very important to set up community centers or day centers, which is structured environment. And they want somewhere that's safe, they know there's medical backup in case there's anything, and they know that they're with their same age peer groups, that they could communicate and that sort of thing. So I think that's the main area one should look at this moment in time. Large corporate organizations can easily look at setting up on this and doing it as a CSR program. They don't have to go beyond more than anything else.
Earlier you spoke about developers and retirement villages. Are we ready for that? I mean, are we ready for developers to come in and build these villages? What would that entail?
Interesting enough, I presented in a seminar about 15 years ago about the need for a retirement village, and I can tell you it's still being talked about and still coming on. Now, I think the setting up a retirement village, if you look at it, it's true. It's documented that a lot of times when you talk about retirement lifestyle villages, you're looking at the middle and upper income bracket group. So that's one. Obviously, that group will also age. So there's nothing wrong in developing setups for them. Now, the problem with retirement village and lifestyle villages, the hardware is the easiest part. It's the software. And the software is something you cannot just buy it across and say, look, I've got this software. So you need to customize it in local, tailor it and build it up. And from the staff who are working there need to be trained. The staff, when I mean, it's not only the staff of nurses and therapists who are in there or the healthcare professionals, but you're looking at even the gardener or the kitchen cook, the auxiliary staff, everybody has to be trained to understand the aspects of the elderly. And I think that's the most important thing. So a good training program and that sort of thing. So the software is the most important thing to look at in setting up a retirement village in a nursing home. This country, yes, it's ready, very ready for it. If people, developers are smart, it can be used as a second home scheme, because you know people are always waiting to get out of the cold country. So there are many ways of setting up a retirement lifestyle village.
But then now we're hazy, so
that's when you leave and go off to come back when the haze is gone.
Are there examples worldwide that we can look to and kind of import, or is it not that simple? Do we need to also take into account where we come from culturally?
I think it's some of the ideas it could be got from the established places that they have. I mean, the fast growing now in terms of retirement villages is India. You know, India is coming up with a lot of lifestyle villages. They don't use the word retirement. They use mainly the lifestyle village now or lifestyle living. You know,
that's clever.
Retirement sounds, okay, time for me to go, that sort of thing. But obviously, you can use some expertise. But I think there's enough local talents around to put it together into a group and work it. I mean, obviously, if you're going to set up a retirement village, the most the architect has to work with the consultants and that's one of the things that, because whether the person is able to understand the needs of the elderly. So to answer your question short, yes, I think we have got local expertise into it to get it going.
And finally, to sum up, is Malaysia prepared for an aging society? And if not, you know, what do we need to do as individuals as well as in terms of policy and corporations to make it happen?
I think the three main things. One is, in context of aging, one has to care for himself. I mean, you are basically responsible for your own health. And I would advise people to age healthily and gracefully. That's the first thing. Obviously, the second factor is policies. I think policies can be drawn up. Malaysia has signed the Madrid Convention for the International on Aging. So you can be a signatory, but whether the policies are put into place, that's the most important thing. Third thing to me is it's nonstop educating the public on healthy living. I think that's the most important thing, so they can live long and live well.
Thank you very much for coming in, Professor.
Thanks very much.
I've been speaking with Professor Nathan Vittilingam, advisor and past president of the Malaysian Healthy Aging Society, and he's also on the advisory panel of the Global Coalition on Aging. We've been discussing how we can best prepare for an aging society and address older people and their needs in an appropriate way. You're listening today to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.